Hello, this is Reverend Todd Sloggett, broadcasting live from Holiness Missions to America headquarters, 619 East Dewey, Sepulpa, Oklahoma, USA. People have been asking me for quite a while now to get something back up on Spreaker, and maybe they'll be glad they ask, maybe not when I'm finished tonight, but this isn't really a sermon, it's not a message, it's just a letter to church people in general that we generally associate and affiliate with us here at HMA. I want to read some pages here that I've carefully written, and I've waited a long time to put this out, but I feel led to do this tonight. What I'm reading is called The Hard Side of Holiness. The Hard Side of Holiness. In the last 3 months, I've been blessed to preach many camp meetings, revivals, homecomings, and special services in Virginia, California, Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, Missouri, Florida, and Texas. Many of the people that I've met, especially young people, have been corresponding with me through different forms of media, corresponding with our other ministers and team members. Through our correspondence, I've heard many wonderful testimonies of what God has done and is doing in hearts and lives, but more than anything, tonight I'm responding to the fact that I'm getting a lot of questions and finding many of the people that we talk to and work with very bewildered. The basic sentiment coming from these and many others around the country is that they're excited about our ministries and how we're going about things, but they're almost confused about how such ministries as ours are quote-unquote allowed to even continue. The idea that we at HMA and many other places besides us have not discarded holiness, yet are doing such quote-untraditional things, seems to be part of the confusion. The only ways that doing mass outreach, street preaching, food pantries, clothing banks, drug awareness programs, jail ministries, etc., etc., could be considered untraditional, is if you exclusively look at the free independent holiness groups only, which happen to comprise about 0.1% of all Christians in the world, and or pretend like all of history was amassed in the last 100 years. Let's not forget the other couple thousand years that the church was functioning before you and I ever got here. This is not about us. It's about God. Rather than take it all point by point, let me just go straight to the root of the problem. For the last two complete generations, the holiness people, in general, have been bombarded with the underpinning subtle doctrine of harsh equals spiritual. This is how we have come to the place in a lot of our fellowships nowadays where mean equals spiritual. Think about it. Negative people and negative attitudes are often considered unapproachable with kindness. We are basically taught that the only way to confront meanness is with other meanness. Preachers will get together and laugh and brag about how hard someone's preaching is and how tough their ministry is, but most of our people don't want it to be that way. Our churches are hooked on harshness, and it has created a frustrating environment for people that want to do outreach and bring people to Christ in the real truth of holiness. They can't figure out what to do with the people they're working with because these new people will not understand this strange, mean spirit that exists in our church. So we either have to shelter our converts, isolating them to separate church environments altogether, which creates a segregated ministry, or be stuck with only reaching out to our families, our backsliders, our backslidden acquaintances, and ignore the whole rest of lost humanity that wouldn't possibly understand. How many of you have caught yourselves meeting someone for the first time and wondering how or where they would fit into your church, what they would and would not be qualified for? I know that we're supposed to pretend like this does not happen, but it happens every day, and you know that it does. It sounds something like this in your mind. Well, they could come to outreach, but probably not to the main service. Or, They would do all right at our church, but probably not in the area fellowship meetings. Have you ever caught yourself thinking something like that? Have you ever caught yourself saying, hey, I should invite so-and-so to church tomorrow night. Oh, wait a minute, I better see who's preaching first. If so, you're not alone. This next generation will grow up just as lopsided and deformed as the last two. They will possess mighty strengths in certain areas, and yet also possess horrible weaknesses and deformities in other areas. If they cannot be taught the right balance between serving God, and the right balance between serving God is not pre-qualifying people. Christ wants everybody. God said, let them come. He told us to go get them. He used terms like whosoever will and all. Why do we pre-qualify? Consider this. Some of the supposed greatest men and deepest ministers of this era and the last several eras of certain movements and groups never smile, never laugh, don't sing, don't clap their hands, never show any joy or excitement at all when at church, and they only associate with a certain class of people. Huh? These are supposed to be the godliest and most spiritual men on the planet? You would think that the people that know Jesus Christ the best would be family and community orientated and would be seen smiling and enjoying life and reaching out a helping hand. They would like children and they would like new converts and they would be compassionate and humble just like Jesus was and his disciples were. But is that the impression you get from all the great ones around us? Sadly, oftentimes not. Let me give you a few examples of what I'm talking about. In many of our holiness circles, if a preacher preaches a message that is all about rules, regulations, strict standards, it would be considered deep and spiritual. But if a preacher preaches a message that is all about love, mercy, forgiveness, it would be considered worldly and watered down. Now, although both can be taken too far, both topics are biblically sound by themselves. Yet for some crazy reason, in some certain groups, only one of them is considered acceptable. It is hypocrisy at worst and double standard at best. Tell me something, are new converts going to understand this double standard? And why are we wasting all of this precious time that we have been given to disciple and raise up new converts and using it to teach them the, quote, political rules that they will have to learn just to get along with the particular group that they have gotten saved into? Some of the deepest and most powerful sermons that I've heard in my life were about the saving grace of Christ, period. And some of the greatest sermons that I've heard in my life were about standards and about being separate from the world. Christianity does have rules, but the rules are not what Christianity is about. This is the only difference between what 80% of us believe compared to the other 20%. The majority seems to believe in a theme of greater love with rules. But the ruling minority seems to believe in the theme of strict and harsh enforcement of the rules and leaving very little room for the concept of God's love and mercy. We drift closer and closer that way seemingly all the time. It's not okay. It's the elephant in the room that we're all pretending isn't there. People need to stop asking the question, is it about standards or is it about outreach? The truth is, no one I know is really asking that question. The question being asked is, what is the major theme of the Bible? Is the major theme of the Bible mercy, love, grace, the blood of Jesus, the cross? Or is it strictness, code of ethics, punishment, rules, chain of command? All of these things are in the Bible, but what is the main theme that we're trying to get across for our master? I know someone's going to ask, well, what about when Jesus kicked over the tables and drove people out with a whip? And there's some rough spots in the Bible. There's no doubt about it. And I agree with them. He really did those things. There was definitely a time and a place for that kind of righteous indignation. That's Bible, and we should accept it as such. But I want to know why it is that when we say something about Jesus suffering the little children to come unto him, or how he told a woman caught in adultery to go and sin no more, or how he had a life-changing conversation with a Gentile tramp at the well, or how he invited himself to a cheating, lying tax collector's house, or how he ate with publicans and sinners, or how his disciples picked corn on the Sabbath day. When we talk about those things, automatically it's considered sugarcoating the gospel. Why is that? That every time we do something Christ-like and spiritual and scriptural that is not harsh by nature, we have to parse it with something that is harsh so that we will seem, what, Christ-like? Christ was good and kind and felt no need to explain his goodness or his kindness to even the Pharisees. It appears that if something is biblical and harsh, we just have to all agree with it. But if it is biblical and kind, we have to posture ourselves carefully lest we be called worldly. If a holiness preacher in certain groups wants to say something about loving the lost, helping the hurting, or being merciful, he has to preempt it by saying something like, Now, I know that we're holiness, and I want you to know I really believe in standards, and I know that we don't want to get too worldly, and I sure don't want you to think that I'm getting soft, and I don't want anybody to call me charismatic, but, and then he says something that is perfectly biblical already all by itself. Why must we qualify the goodness of God? What is so wrong with just saying just what Christ said and doing just what Christ did? Are we so spiritual all of a sudden that we could teach Jesus a thing or two? Of course not. If we are not careful, we will hear a preacher preach or a saint testify. If we've not already been pre-convinced to respect and agree with that person in advance, we will immediately begin to think of verses that disagree with or correct what the person is saying, even if they have a perfectly sound verse for what they are saying. Excuse me. Do we believe that this is what the Bible was written for, to use it in a spiritual duel, in a quest of who's more right? We should be looking for truth and fellowship and kindred spirits and honesty. I'll give you a perfect example. The last two generations of parts of this movement have become so critical of every little thing that many of them won't have anything to do with national politics whatsoever anymore, period. Every person that comes along to run for something is not good enough. If you say I'm for this one or I'm for that one, you'll be turned on and attacked, ridiculed and criticized. How dare you be for someone who is for gun control, or not firm enough against abortion, or not conservative enough on this issue or that issue, or he's Catholic or he's Mormon, or so what do we get in return for all of our hard, morally ethical stance? We're all against everybody and we're against everything. What did we get this time? We got a gun-hating, pro-abortion, Muslim-loving, free-market-destroying, socialist, probably Marxist, leader of the free world. We should pat ourselves on the back for this. So what happened was the winner of the contest was the worst of the worst of what we wanted. Is this going to continue to happen even in the churches? When the guns start blazing, are we all going to fight and kill each other, or are we going to run and hide until there's nothing left but the worst of the worst and pretend like this isn't happening? Why do we do this? Because we are in the holiness ranks oftentimes nothing but spiritual demolition men. We are very, very, very good at tearing stuff down. We can tear down huge national grassroots movements if we have to, but we couldn't build a sandbox with our skills and our experience in building things. While we're busy tearing down, others are busy building up, and they're building much faster than we are tearing. If the only response we will ever have is to be against everything and for nothing, then we will ultimately lose everything. It's the same thing in our churches. We're supposed to have the purest doctrine on the planet, and in many, many ways we do. But it doesn't matter, because we're only good at destroying things. We're not good at building anything. Our churches are some of the least influential churches in the greater population of humanity. We have hardly any social programs. We have almost no major outreach campaigns, no nationally recognized figures, no hospitals, no colleges, hardly any elderly care centers or drug programs or books published. Why? Because we're not builders of God's kingdom anywhere near as much as we are destroyers of anything that could ever even slightly possibly resemble something that could eventually become impure. Almost every great religious group in the history of the human race has some wonderful stories of men that tried and failed and tried and failed and tried and failed repeatedly, yet eventually they got up and got over it and they finally did some wonderful thing for God. We don't have those stories. When we tell stories like that in our classes and in our pulpits, we have to tell them about other groups. We have to reach into the history of the Baptists and the Methodists and the Nazarene movements, or into the worlds of science and politics. We have to tell about Lincoln and Einstein and Finney and Spurgeon or Moody, because we don't have those guys in our ranks. We're not set up for them. In our groups, if the slightest bit of blood gets in the water, the sharks attack from every direction. Just like in nature, but even worse than nature. Because in nature, if there is blood in the water off the Pacific coast of America, you wouldn't see a shark there from the southern coast of Australia swirling around. But if we have a church problem in Ohio, not only do you get the attack dogs from Ohio trying to kill the people involved, but all of a sudden you have attack dogs from Oklahoma and Alabama and everywhere else trying to get a piece of the action too. Because we're professional destroyers. We're in a group that you're not allowed to ever fail in. And in a group that you're not allowed to fail in, the only people that make it to the top would be ones that don't fail. And as a general rule, the ones that don't fail are the ones that never try anything. Could this be why our groups are so unrecognizable as a whole? Because some of the best of us are some of our weakest ones? Oh, dear God, please help us. We have some of the best prospects in our new converts, in our young Christians, in our up-and-coming ministers, in our Christian workers, in our up-and-coming Bible college graduates. But what are we going to give them to do? Shall we teach them nothing more than who to hate and who to tear down? Shall we teach them that the best way to survive is to just stay out of the fray? And that the easiest way to move up is to step on someone else after they fall? Or can we teach them, this next generation, that it is very, very possible to live holy, deep, sanctified, and productive lives for Christ and still have peace and joy and love and compassion? The fact is this: victorious Christian living is not only possible, but it is scriptural. And it is imperative. It is not less holy to be compassionate and more holy to be modest. If one is compassionate but immodest, something is wrong. If one is modest and not compassionate, something is equally wrong. But there's nothing wrong with having a discussion just on compassion, just like there's nothing wrong with having a discussion just on modesty. Modesty is holy. Just like love and concern for others is holy. The idea that these two are somehow at odds with each other is absurd. Yet in our day-to-day fellowships and ministries, you'd have a hard time knowing that. And our young people are struggling with it. Bottom line is this: the attacks on reaching out and doing good are a joke. If our groups are going to attack worldliness and evil, I'm right there with them. But if they're going to attack anything and everything that doesn't fit their personal idea of perfect standards, then they're going to lose. As a matter of fact, they probably already have. For all the people out there that believe that all holiness is harsh, it is not. For all the people out there that believe all holiness preachers are politicians, they are not. For all the people out there that believe you have to choose between living a good, clean, holy standard and fellowshipping and sanctified people or working with homeless missions, drug rehabs, children's outreach, nice people, fun people, mass ministry, you do not have to choose. They go hand in hand. Serve Christ. Service Him with all your heart. Enjoy it. Find friends by being friendly. And don't cross the Bible. It will work. And always, 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 always think outside the box, but inside the Bible. And before someone even asks, yes, you can share this, repost this, copy it, paste it, put it in your church, put it in a flyer, put it in the bulletin, use it as a fundraiser to make money for Holiness Missions to America or one of our affiliates, or you can misquote parts of it, take it out of context, use it against me, whatever you feel led to do, you just go right ahead and do it. And God bless you. The one thing I do not want you to do with this, those of you that are sick and tired of the meanness and the harshness and the politics, don't take my stance against that for your chance to go worldly. You go back and you re-listen to what I've said. I'm still calling for the standard. I'm still calling for modesty. I'm still calling for all of the legitimate things that the Bible calls for. But I'm just saying there's a way to love, to reach, to care, to get along or just go away or ignore or whatever without using the Bible and the Christian name of Christ to just tear down and tear down and tear down. Holiness is right. And I'm sick about the hard side of it. But the hard side is not God's holy side. It's the man-made religious side. And we're not going to throw out the baby with the bathwater. We'll stand for truth. We'll reach out. We'll win souls for Christ. We'll make God's good heaven. And we'll do it together. God bless you. Love you. Pray for HMA.